So we are in Parshat Tazria. I want to point out two issues which I think are separate but perhaps interrelated, and this will give us a general understanding for how Tum'ah works. What is the worst type of Tum'ah? So there are two answers to that question, and that should be the indication that there's two separate ways of looking at it. On the one hand, what we sometimes call the Avi Avot HaTum'ah, Tumat Tmeid is considered to be the worst type of Tumat. It's probably far more complicated than we realize right now, and that I'm going to speak about it, why it would be Avi Avot HaTum'ah. It could be Avi Avot HaTum'ah simply because there's the most amount of Toladot. Meaning, just like Shabbat, there's Avot and there's Toladot. So Avi Avot could be because of its transferability, and as you go to a secondary or third type of Tumat which emanates from it. But is that necessarily a statement in terms, or let's call it an existential statement in terms of death, as being the very worst type of Tumat? Yes, I agree with you before. Your analysis is absolutely acceptable, that death is not a good thing, and death generates Tumat, and I can therefore say it's the worst type of Tumat, because death would be the worst type of thing. And all that I'm absolutely okay with. I mean, I'm willing to agree with every single word of that. And I can go further and suggest that maybe even the loss of life on different levels is what creates Tumat in all kinds of different things. And therefore, having life, losing life, having potential, losing potential, is what maybe is a definition of Tumat. Because again, let's be honest. We don't know how to translate Tumat into English. There are certain words, and a lot of them in this week's parsha, that we really don't have language to translate. The most we can do is to approximate. And at the end of the day, we're going to find ourselves qualifying our translation and our approximation. You're going to say impurity, spiritual impurity. What does spiritual impurity mean? Spiritual impurity does not tell you what Tumat is, which means the word Tumat is a lot stronger than spiritual impurity. So as I said, the language is a problem, and maybe that's true whenever you have technical words, and the best way to translate Tumat is to translate it as Tumat and write it in italics and say that's what this is. So maybe the idea of Tumat generally deals with this concept of losing somehow its potential, its life, or whatever. The second type of Tumat, the second road map that we'll take, will be defining Tumat as distance from Tahara. Or maybe even a little differently, if we'll imagine that the Mishkan is in the center of the camp, which is really the proper way to imagine this back in the context of where things are being taught. So you have at the very center the Mishkan, and around the Mishkan you have the Machane Leviyah, and around the Machane Leviyah you have the general Machane. And therefore, a person could be in a situation, they're in the machane, or the camp, of Kodesh, they're in the area which is Kodesh, or they're in the area of the Leviyah, or they're in the area of the Kahal, of the community, or there could be a situation that you were being forced outside of all three machanot, and outside of the community completely. Now, if I say, okay, so now that we know, we've established, that Tumat Meit, Tumat, when somebody comes in contact with the dead, is the worst type of Tumat, so then by definition that person should be thrust outside of all three machanot, and the only problem with this is we know that's not the case. So if that's not the case, then now I have to stop and reevaluate and say, hold it, is Tumat Meit really the worst type of Tumat? Because we find that there's someone else who's thrust outside of all three machanot, and that's actually the person who's suffering from another word that we don't know how to define, and that is Tzara'at. So if you want to call that spiritual leprosy, if that makes, again, just like, you know, spiritual impurity makes you happy, so maybe spiritual leprosy makes you happy, it doesn't. So therefore, what I now understand is that I may have more than one type of Tum'ah, and I really have to start thinking on two different levels. So there will be other types of expressions of Tum'ah by other kinds of things, be it a Sheretz, be it an Avelah, and so on. But again, it won't have the exact same laws, but Tum'ah will be appropriate when you talk about a loss of life and all kinds of things. Tumat Meit will only be by... Right. By the way, if you want to think for a second, one of the strange things about this week's parsha, which is a source that you don't have in front of you, where in the very beginning, Parsha Tezria, a woman becomes pregnant. V'deber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Perek Yud Bet Pasuk Aleph, if anybody has a Chumash. V'deber B'nei Yisrael Lemor, Isha Ki Tezria, a woman becomes pregnant. V'yolda Zachar, and has a male child. V'tam'a Shivat Yamim, she will become Tme'a for 7 days. Kimei Nidat Dovta Titma, she should become a Nida, similar to the situation where a woman is Tme'a from a Nida. Now, if I pause a second for the Nida can make a certain amount of sense. If I say that a loss of life generates a Tumah, then I can say that the loss of a potential life can generate a Tumah. And as I said, I have their inner logic to understand that. My only problem with logic is, I have two problems. One is a technical problem and one is an intrinsic problem. Technical problem is making the comparison to Nida, which has never been taught yet. So it's making a reference to something that you don't know what it is. So it would have been valuable at this point to have already taught those laws to make the cross reference. So I'm saying that's a technical problem, which I think is interesting. The other one, which is intrinsic, is to say, hold it a second, just stop. To say that a woman who is a nida may generate a type of a tumah because of this potential life which is gone, I understand, but to say a woman who just now gave birth should have a tum'ah just like the woman who is in Nidah, you say, hold it, these are opposites, so what are you talking about? On the one hand, I could say that, and I want to make this very simple, so on the one hand, I can say that maybe the tum'ah is by having the loss of the child. Loss of the child, which means if Tumah is she used to carry a baby, she no longer carries a baby. When I say the loss of the child, I didn't mean that in a negative way. I meant that in terms of who she was. Maybe it's akin to Saturday night, where one of the things that we do in Havdalah is we take the Besamim. So why do we take the Besamim? So the answer generally given is, at least according to Tosfot, is because you just now lost your Neshama Yeterah. So that generates this need for mourning, as it were, because you had a neshama terah, you lost your neshama yiterah, so now you need some kind of level of comfort. So I'm saying, using that same kind of a thought on a much, you know, more real level, because it's very hard to point at a neshama yiterah. So if somebody has to have some type of comfort for the loss of neshama yiterah, so what about you had another human being inside of you, and that other human being now has become independent, so therefore is there any, just like I can talk about death, being the sense of the loss of life, so now there is life. And again, I understand where you're going to tell me that the comparison breaks down, because the baby's alive, and that's wonderful, but I'm still talking about the individual who's lost the sense, so maybe that's where it comes from. I have a whole more complicated explanation, but I thought that was very nice. Correct. 100%. That's 100% that should be the next thought that comes in, is that on an emotional level, tend to suffer from this postpartum depression, which may be very much in line with what the Chumash is saying over here, which again, maybe this sounded very surprising when you first heard it, and say, oh, hold it, there's a lot more to this than I ever would have considered before. Now there's actually a problem, which is a side problem, if we're already here. And by the way, incidentally, anybody who ever read my book Explorations, where I discussed this, I did go in a completely different direction there. There, predictably, I went back to Garden of Eden. I don't know how we get there every single time. But in order to understand that, there's the second problem. The second problem is that aside from the Tum'ah, which is generated, there's what's called Yemei Tahara. There is a different amount of time for a male child and a female child. 7 days and 33 days equaling 40 for the man. 14 and 66 equaling 80 if she gives birth to a female. And then we're told at the very end, she brings her offerings. Now, those of us who are now very well educated and sensitive to korbanot, the korban we would have predicted should have been a Thanksgiving offering. It should have been a korban todah. That should have been the offering. Instead, we get a little thrown back when we are told that at the end, what she brings, uvamalot yimei tahara levenu levat tavi keves ben shnato la'ula, a complete burnt offering on the one hand, uvenu na'otor lechatat, and to bring a sin offering as well. So we say, what kind of sin offering? Why is a sin offering necessary in such a case? And on top of that, We have a Gemara that apparently Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was asked this by his students, and he had better students than I do, because his students will accept his answer, and you will not accept his answer. It says, Shalu Tamidav et Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Gemara Nida Daf Lamed Aleph, from the bed. A lot of water under the bridge between Monday and today. Mipnei ma amrat Torah. Why did the Torah say, Yoled et Mevia Korban, that a woman who gave birth has to bring a korban? And again, I believe he's referring to the korban chatat. Had it been a korban todah, again, I'm going to say, I don't believe anybody would have asked that question. Why? Because she has reason to be thankful. Omer lahem b'shosha karat leled, as she's giving birth, she's in labor, kofetzet v'nishbat shalot tizakek leba'ala. She lets words come out of her mouth and she swears that she will never be intimate with her husband again. Therefore the Torah said to bring a korban. So am I correct about this? That Rav Shimon Bar Yochai student said, oh, okay, that makes sense. I mean, the only problem that I have with it, if the problem is that she took God's name in vain, for example. So that's a separate prohibition. Why does it need to be included over here in every birth? If the problem over here is that she swore falsely, there's a separate prohibition. So why is that over here? Which means, why is this a universal? That's really the problem. So as I said, when I wrote about this previously, I went back to the Garden of Eden and asked the following question. Why is there death in the world at all? Why is there death? And the reason for death is because eating from the tree. So eating from the tree causes actually a couple things. On the one hand, on a generic, universal level, is where death comes from. Second point is that because her particular punishment was what was that the childbirth will be painful. So over here, when I see that, maybe I'll add one more comment. It says that she is tmei'ah like a nidah for 7 days. So the Baal Turim points out that's sort of like yimei'ah beilut. And he says something which sounds very depressing. Abelut, and then after, I mean, as you come in, your family is mourning, and then as you leave, they're mourning. And he says, the same way you go, the same way you leave. Like thanks for coming, thanks for going, right? Sei gesund und stark, right? So, like, my uncle, my mother's brother, came to visit, and he put up with us for half an hour. And then he said, thanks for coming, thanks for going, sei gesund und stark. So, the Baal Turim's comment is very interesting, but why are we talking about death when a baby was just born? So I'm going to go back again and say, because we bring our children into a world where there is a world where death is a reality. Which means parents, together with all the joy of having a new child, there's also the angst and the anxiety involved in what's going to be with this child and how do I keep the child safe and what can happen to this child. And the worst possible thoughts enter one's mind as well. The Baal Turim is pointing in that direction. But as I said, when I go back to the Garden of Eden, then I have this common denominator which actually takes into account everything. It means that's why there's death because of the tree, and that's why there's pain in childbirth, which means maybe the Korban Chatat is not just for her, and I know that we're going to now go on into thoughts of original sin. Why is there Korban Chatat? Korban Chatat, because this child can die. Why is the Korban Chatat? Because there's death in the world. What's the Chatat? It's not for her directly, but for a more general thing. One more point, and then we're going to shift focus. One more point, there's a Zohar, which may be l'shitatam, in terms of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The Zohar makes the observation, having nothing to do with this, it talks about a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. So those of you who read Shir HaShirim religiously, the Zohar is quoting Shir HaShirim, and it says, Kulach yafa ra'ayati, should I look at you when I read this? Hinach yafa inayach yonim. And the Zohar says, Yonim, delayt bekol ofin mehenna legabe bala ki yona. That there's no other creature, certainly among the birds, that is as monogamous as the yona. So, with that observation, could be what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the Gemara was responding to in terms of the woman and her husband, is because he noticed what was the korban being brought. Again, let's remember last week. When Aaron brings an egel, right, we say, we understand the chet egel. When Am Yisrael bring the sir izim, we understand the sale of Yosef. So he's saying, okay, so what is the significance, the symbolic significance, what is the significance over here of the fact that that what's being brought is Shnei Turim, Shnei B'nei Yonah. So now, again, if I use the Zohar to say that this is something which is a statement of monogamy, or expression of monogamy, so then maybe he feels that if that's the sin offering, maybe that's where the tension comes in. Again, you can go in different directions, how a child's going to affect the relationship. You just had parents, now there's a child as well. How does that affect the family dynamic on the one? As I said, you can think in all kinds of directions, or as Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, that somehow the relationship with the spouse could be impacted, but that's, as I'm saying, maybe it's the korban which is the impetus. Now, I want to stop for a second, because it could be that, I'm not going to say that everything I said is wrong, everything I said is right, and I like it, I wrote it, and I mean, I told you before why I had to write things, because people would say, well, where'd you get that from? So they're not happy unless it's in a book, so I had to write it in a book, so I said, I read it in a book, so it's in a book, it's fine. The truth is, they like books from people who aren't alive better, but we're not going there. I mean, there's a limit what I'm going to do for my career. Look what they find amusing. It's amazing. So I do like that, but I another thought process that I had, and this is really a thought that I had this week, and then we're going to move back towards the sources that you actually have in front of you. And do we find, is there ever a situation that somebody may bring a korban chatat and there's no sin involved? Which means, does a korban, that's really my question, does a korban chatat, does a quote-unquote sin offering, and maybe even when we use the word sin offering, we are guilty of certain Christian-influenced understanding, because the word chatat, or the word chet, or the word sin, I mean, let's keep something in mind. As a rule, I'm not saying there's no places you can break the rule, but as a rule, if you did something on purpose, is there a korban for that?
No.
So, didn't that just now tell me something really interesting about the Mishkan generally and about Korbanot? Which means we're not talking about the type of sin. I mean, what are the real sins? I mean, anybody, you want to raise your hand now, like, make it personal. Meaning, what are the real sins that we do? The real sins that we do are not the things that we did accidentally. Right? And on top of all that, I mean, that's really what's troubling over here. Why should a woman who just gave birth have to bring a korban chatat? So yes, Rav Shimon Yochai's answer is wonderful, because maybe she cursed out her husband and so on and so forth. But still, I mean, as I said, Rav Shimon Yochai's students were all tzaddikim, so they accepted this answer. But I think most of us have a little bit more difficulty with this. What do you mean? That should really be much more go case by case, which is again the reason why I wanted to take back the Chaba, because that turns it into a universal. And by the way, then it could be that this child is going to die, and as bizarre as this is going to be what I'm about to say, it could be that if she has a female child, then she's a carrier. She's a carrier in terms, does that make any sense? She's a carrier of bringing children into the world. She's a carrier of someone who's going to have pain of childbirth. Which means that maybe that's where the double comes from. As I said, that's a thought that I had. Now, going back to the question, which I think is the question we need to ask, are we right looking for the sin that this mother is guilty of in order to justify the sin offering, acknowledging now that sin is not really always sin, because our best sins are not the types of sins that you can bring, meaning you can't bring a korban for those kinds of things, and we won't point fingers, but yes, I know what you've done. But that could be, have a different dynamic as well, but hold off that for a second, because I do want to bring one other example, which I think is relevant. The example is by the Nazir. And even for me to use this as an example, I have to go into a machloket, and I'm basing my whole part I'm saying now on a flip side of something, which is essentially, but here's the discussion, the Gemara. Discussion is, how appropriate is it for me to make a vow or to take upon myself more prohibitions? Or let's say, for example, I'm going to say, I'm going to fast. So again, there is an approach. Monday and Thursday is Yomeidin. Monday and Thursday we read the Torah, there's judgment going on that day, so that's the day that we need to be more careful. So there are people, some people have a custom of fasting every Erev Rosh Chodesh. Again, I can go on. Is this a good thing? Meaning, God gave us food, right? There's Yerushalmi, which is a very important Yerushalmi. It says that in the day of judgment, God is going to ask us about every single legitimate pleasure that we could have taken advantage of. We didn't say, why didn't you? It says, the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim, he used to go to the Shuk, and if he saw a new fruit, he would always buy it. You know, why did he buy it? He goes, what am I going to, and Yom Hadin, what am I going to, God's going to say, so? Did you like kiwis? He said, and every time I tasted them, they look, you know, they can kill you. So you had at least tasted, and then never tasted again. So the Gemara says it like this. Amar Shmuel, so Shmuel is our first opinion, kol ha-yoshev b'tanit nekra chote. Whoever sits and takes upon themselves fast days is considered to be a sinner. You say, oh, he's a big tzaddik? No, you're a sinner by doing this. Sabaki haitana, what supports this approach? Ditanya, we learned in a breita, Rebbe Elazar HaKapar v'Rebbe Omer, Ma Talmud Lomar v'Kiper Alav Me'asher Chata Al HaNefesh. This is talking about the Nazir, the end of his being a Nazir. He has to bring a sin offering. So what sin did the Nazir do? V'chi be'eze nefesh chata zeh. What sin is the Nazir guilty of? Ela shitzi eretz lo min hayayin. That he tortured himself by saying, I'm not accepting upon myself more wine. V'lo dvarim kal v'chomer. It's kal v'chomer. U'ma zeh shelo tzi eretz lo min hayayin nikre chote. The Torah is by telling the Nazir. The Torah by telling the Nazir that you have to bring a sin offering, and he only prohibited upon himself one thing, somebody who fasts should certainly be considered a sinner. Alachet kama v'chama. Rabbi Lazar Omer Nikra Kodesh. Rabbi Lazar says, no, the person who fasts is considered to be holy. So if he's holy, the Nazir is holy. So now I want to go back to the holiness of the Nazir, and then this will lead us right back to the Mitzorah and to the pages that you have in front of you, which is the most important part. So, we have two different approaches. One approach is that if I stay away from things which I'm allowed, that's a terrible thing. And the other is, no, that's a good thing. That's a holy thing. So what is a Nazir? There are three parts of the Nazir that I want to point out. One part of the Nazir is that he has now accepted upon himself that he will not come in contact with the dead, which means a Nazir becomes like a Kohen. Okay, one, like a Kohen. Two, a Nazir can't drink wine, which means now he's not just like a Kohen, he's like a Kohen. No. A Kohen on service. A Kohen on the job. One, is he's like a Kohen all the time. And two, he's like a Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash on service. And three, he grows his hair long, which is the opposite of what a Kohen does. Which means, oh, you want to be holy or you like a Kohen? You really like a Kohen? But no, you're not a Kohen. Stop it. You can't be a Kohen. Your father wasn't a Kohen. Which means the Nazir is a quasi-Kohen who needs to be reminded he's not a Kohen. But during this situation, he has this additional level of Kedusha, whereby he can't come in contact with the dead and he can't drink wine, as I'm going to say it again, like a Kohen in service. But this other thing to remind him that no, he's fundamentally not a Kohen. So full stop right there. I'm willing to suggest that maybe the reason that the Nazir brings the Korban Chatat is not because anything he did during the time that he was a Nazir. Let's say the minimum time of a Nazir is 30 days. 30 days comes by, he didn't become Tameh, he didn't do anything wrong, so why is he bringing a Korban Chatat? The Korban Chatat is because he's stepping away from a situation of heightened Kedusha. Let me go back to what we said in the very beginning today. So the minimum Nizirut is you take it upon yourself for 30 days. There's different types of Nizirut, so I just chose. You could also say, I want to do it 45 days. I mean, there was room, because it does work within a vow as well, but the minimum is considered. Somebody says, I'm going to be a Nazir, it means for 30 days. Somebody says, I'm going to be a Nazir for my entire life, so then they never leave it. So then there's no Korban Chatat. Which means the Korban, that's what I want to remind you. The Korban Chatat is when you stop being a Nazir. So let's just say, for example, if somebody's a Nazir their whole life, so they should bring a Korban Chatat every couple weeks, right? Because they haven't been drinking wine. So my point is that the Korban Chatat is when you stop being a Nazir. So apparently, the reason you're bringing the Korban Chatat is because you're no longer a Nazir. So that's what I wanted to say. Let's go back to the original formulation in terms of Tumah. There's two different things that we spoke about. The Tumat Mate level, and then the Mitzora level, right? Those were our two categories. The Tumat Mate had to do with what's the worst type of Tum'ah? Well, there was life and the life now has left. On the other hand, we knew that there is this category called the Mitzora, and the Mitzora is the one who's most distanced from the Machaneh. So maybe the reason the woman has to bring the Korban Chatat in this particular situation is because during this entire period, she was unable to come to the Mishkan, which means that the Korban Chatat is to bring about forgiveness, not for a sin, but for the distance from the Mishkan. And now she can enter the Mishkan again, which means the re-entry to the Mishkan after a period of not being able to enter the Mishkan, that is what generates the Korban Chatat. And what I'm claiming over here is that maybe this entire issue has nothing to do with sin, as we would use in the Christian sense, but in terms of distance or lack of distance from the Makom HaKadosh. And by the way, what is the Korban that the Nazir brings? Uv'yom HaShmini v'yishtei Torim u'shnei b'nei Yonah. Yeah, so I thought that already makes it somewhat more interesting in terms of what exactly is the sin. So I'm just pointing out that there may very well be this other level of connection. Am I 100% convinced of everything I just now said? No. But I do think that this is a possible approach to understand it. So let's look at source number one. Here we are looking at our mitzara. V'ra'u to'a kohen, v'hine se'et ha'negel levana adumit, and so on and so forth. Again, all these words don't mean anything to me. V'hatzarua asher bo hanaga begadav yu prumim, his clothing should be prumim. What does that mean? Unraveled. Viroshoya parua, and his head should be wild, overgrown. Va'al safam ya'ate, and his lip, as it were, should be covered. Vitame tame yikara, and he should call out tame tame. Kol yimei asher hanegabo yitma tamehu, badad yeshev michutz lamachane moshavo. He is supposed to be outside by himself. By the way, those are two things. Badad is by himself, and michutz lamachane, meaning one is geographic and the other is social. Even though you can tell me they're both social. But one is outside of the machane, and two, not just outside by himself. So if you have a whole bunch of people who are mitzora, they cannot all sit outside together. The Targum Unkula says, Va'al safam ka'avela, that there's a sense of mourning that is connected to this. The Targum Yonatan, v'ka'avel yelavush, that the whole mode over here of his existence is really one of avilut. Rashi writes, prumim kruim, it means torn, perua, migadel se'ar, v'al safam yateh ka'avel. And this exact same principle, that his whole disheveledness should be one of avilut. There is an interesting statement for Rabbeinu Bachaya, and you'll see in a second where he's getting it from. He's quoting a midrash in Eicha, but you know what? Before we read the midrash, just look at verse 6 for a second. It's very clear to me that the author of Eicha, most likely Yirmiyahu, is playing off of the mitzora when he starts to develop the images of Am Yisrael suffering in the Churban. Eicha, very beginning, first pasuk, Eicha yeshva badad, which means sitting by ourselves. Again, that word, Ruhu badad yoshev, Eicha yeshva badad, is really just playing off of the Mitzora, which means we have become lepers among the nations. We are, by the way, let's keep in mind, what is the most important thing about the Mitzora? He is the most distanced from the Mikdash. Again, did Yirmiyahu understand that? 100%. That's how he starts Eicha. There's no Beit HaMikdash. We are like a Mitzora. Look how distanced we are from the Mikdash. Of course, the reason now is not because we've been thrown out of all camp. Well, it's not because we've moved as much as because the Mikdash has been destroyed. And it continues, again, just look at the heightened words here. Goltai Yehuda, Darchei Tzion Avelut. Again, these are all words that we're just used to. But I'm pointing out that it may well be that within the mindset of Yirmiyahu is this thought of the Mitzora coming in, and I'm basing myself upon the first, verse of the Badai. Keeping this in mind, We can look at the Midrash, which is quoted by Rabbeinu Bachaye. He's quoting the introduction to Eicha Rabbati, the introduction to the Midrash on Eicha. But Sarua Shabo Anega Begadovia Prumim Roshia Perua. Okay, that's our pasuk. Amru b'Midrash v'Hetzarua Zebeit HaMikdash. V'Hetzarua Zebeit HaMikdash. Asher Bo Hanega Zeavodah Zarah. Shemetameh Kenega. So what is the thing that brings the impurity? That's idolatry. Bigadav Yeprumim, and his clothing should be torn, Eila Bigdei Kohuna, which were completely torn. V'Roshoh Yeparua Zeshchina Shenistaka Misham. And this disheveledness this morning, that is the Shechina. V'Al Safam Yateh Shebitlo Et HaTorah, because the Jews didn't keep the Torah. V'Tameh Tameh Yikra Zechor Ban Rishon Zechor Ban Sheni. So again, such an interesting midrash, but again, I'm going to say is that this introduction to Eicha, and if you notice, there are a lot of them, this is only introduction number 21, this long, long introduction to Eicha, this introduction says, okay, let's use the model over here is Mitzora, and let's use this pasuk to understand and to describe what just now took place. But as I said, I think that what got this type of mindset was specifically the words and the images which are being suggested over here in Parsha Azriah. Yeah. Look at source number 7, and this will be a surprising source for you. How do you know that you're supposed to put up a tombstone? A matzeva. Where does it come from? It takes it back to our pasuk. U'metzaynin ala kfarot, Rabbi Abou, Omer mehacha, v'tameh tameh yikra. Tuma korelo v'omeret lo prosh. That you need to warn somebody. When he says, again, what was the pasuk? V'tameh tameh yikra. He has to call out tameh. So how do you call out tameh? This is understanding the pasuk. And by the way, again, notice this overlap between Tumat Meit and between Tumat Mitzorah. I mean, I could say that a Mitzorah, especially according to Chazal, who say that Mitzorah, and they phonetically see Mitzorah connected to Motzi Shemra. They like that alliteration, Mitzorah, Motzi Shemra. So they said that how do you become a Mitzorah when you're guilty of misspeech? So therefore, I can then say that maybe that somebody gets Tumat Meit when they die, and therefore the neshama, right, leaves the body, and now I've left a body without the neshama, so that vacuum is what causes the tumah. And again, I'm going to say the same thing with the woman who gives birth, but perhaps this ability to speak, which is the ruach milalala, it's this spirit of God within us which allows us to speak, it is really the defining factor within humanity. God's creation takes place specifically through speech. Like God could have created anthropomorphically snapping a finger the same way that he anthropomorphically speaks. I mean, God does not have a larynx or a throat or air. The whole thing is clearly metaphorical. So therefore, if God's speech is metaphorical, God could have created through his outstretched arm, as it were. I mean, it could have been any metaphor that you wish. But the fact that God creates through speech, therefore, almost automatically creates this relationship with this human who he will create and give us the ability to speak as well. And therefore, one of the most important verses in the first two chapters of Bereshit is Adam speaking and giving names to the animals, being creative, speaking, and using this divine gift. So maybe when we misspeak, what we do is we've also, to a certain extent, expelled the divine within us. We have somehow lost something, and by losing this divine ability, it generates a type of tumah which is very similar to tumat tamed, although it may be worse. It may be worse in the sense because we're still alive and we're capable of better. We can do better. I mean, by the way, just think about it for a second. You know, animals can attack one another, but it's only human beings that can attack one another with words. And we can be devastating with words. We can say things that can just cut somebody down and humiliate them to the point that they no longer want to be alive. On the other hand, we can use words to uplift people, and we have this incredible capacity of speech. So it's very interesting to know that the Mitzorah is the real worst type of Tum'ah, completely separate from the Mishkan, and maybe it is because that they have not forfeited, but they have sullied this tool that they have, this ability which they have, and maybe it is nonetheless connected with loss or the temporary loss. Now, I want to get to a Zohar, which is going to describe this this process I just now described, said in a much deeper way, but give me a couple of seconds. So far, v'tamei tamei yikra, he has to call out why, so moved laterally, and said that when there's tum'ah, we need to warn other people. So therefore, the mitzora, who needs to be by himself, needs to warn people, no, you can't be here with me, because I'm tamei, I need to be by myself. But it's very interesting, nonetheless, that he's considered to be not just contagious, but spiritually contagious, that thereby he can't be with other people. So let's pause there for a second. So it's interesting that the Gemara concludes from this. This is the source that we learn that you need to warn people about Tumah, and that's the source that you put up a Matzeva. So I said right there was something which I think is interesting. The Bechor Shor, and again, he is one of the Balei HaTosfot, V'hatsarua achluka yinhag minhag avelut kishahu minadel l'shamayim. Again, just notice the shift over here, but maybe it's obvious to you. He is separate from heaven. See, I would have said, right. So he is distanced from heaven. What was he really distanced from? From the Mikdash. So how does he understand this right away? It means that there is this separation between him and heaven, which means in a sense, heaven on earth is described as the Mishkan, in the same way that he is geographically separated from outside of all the machanot, he's really separated from heaven. So as I said, that's a real interesting comment that the Bechor Shor makes. V'tamei tamei yikra, shir chakim v'enu, even his own family has to stay away from him. And the rabbis say that he needs to inform others about his situation. Why? V'rabim yivakshu alav rachamim. So that other people will pray for him. Look at the Gemara in source 9. This is where he gets it from. Kiditanya v'tamei tamei yikra. Tzorech la'adiyu tzara l'rabim rami v'kshurat rachamu alav. This is the source for all those emails you may get. Somebody saying, somebody's sick, can you please pray for them? Where do you see that you pray for other people? So the Gemara says, no, we see a situation prayer. It's based upon a pasuk in the Torah. What's the pasuk in the Torah that you ask people to pray for you? Tamei, tamei yikra. That's where it got. I'm tamei, which means I'm separate. Now go back to the way the Bechor Shor used this. I have a distance between me and heaven, not just me in the Mishkan, between me and heaven, or as my father said, he in a sense is excommunicated from heaven, and we need to still understand what that means. Can people please pray for me? By the way, look at the Ramban in source number 10. The Torah to Adam is the Ramban's work. He here is describing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick. V'od k'deshi yechavein dat, meaning you should go. V'shamim mehachod de Bikur Cholim k'deshi yechabdu v'yorav tzulu lefanav yasulo atzrachim hatzrachim l'cholov imtzan nachat ruach im chavirav. He's quoting the Gemara in Adarim and Daf Mem. We're told that one of Rabbi Kiva's students got sick. This is interesting in terms of Rabbi Kiva's students. Nobody came to visit him, which is interesting in terms of Rabbi Kiva's students. Rabbi Kiva then himself said, where is he? He goes to visit him, sees the house is a mess, and Rabbi Kiva picks up the broom and starts sweeping up and starts cleaning up the place. Some say he didn't do it himself, but he told the other students to do it, which, by the way, may not be because he wasn't willing to do it, but he was telling them, this is what you need to do. You need to take care of somebody else. But then the Gemara continues and says, it also brings another source about somebody goes in and says, you need to go and visit the sick, because if you don't go and visit the sick, you're not going to end up praying for them. So the Ramban continues and says, Va'od, kidai sheyichavein dato l'rachamim ve'yavakei shelav. So the Ramban continues, not only, meaning, what is Bikur Cholim? A. Bikur Cholim is not what you think. Bikur Cholim does not mean visiting the sick. Bikur Cholim has two components to it. First component is taking care of the sick. What do you need? Can I do some shopping for you? Do you need me to take you to the doctor? Do you need help with something? Visiting the sick, the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is not sitting there and sometimes being a burden on the person who's sick. Bikur Cholim is helping the person who's sick. That's point number one that the Ramban just now said. Point number two, he says, "Va'od k'deshi chavein dato l'rachamim ve'yivakesh alav." Second thing is to help them spiritually, and you should pray for them. Why? K'detanya v'tamei tamei yikra tzarich l'diot tzara l'rabim v'rabim v'akshim alav rachamim hilkach hamavakar et acholu v'lo b'kesh alav rachamim lo kiyem hamitzvah. If you visit the sick and you didn't pray for them, you didn't do the mitzvah. That's how far the Ramban just went. And in case you're wondering, it made its way into the Shulchan Aruch. I don't know who said it in the Shulchan Aruch, because it's there in parentheses, source 11, v'kol shebikir v'lo bikesh levrachim lo kima mitzvah. So this is written in the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot Bikur Cholim, how you identify the different statements. Over here, a statement in parentheses is most likely not a Ramah. It's most likely somebody pushed it at some point, but why? Because the Beit Yosef wrote it in the name of the Ramban. What just now happened? What just now happened? It's fascinating. We just now went from the Mitzora, right, who says Tamei Tamei. The Gemara says why? Because he's asking other people to pray for him. Why? Well, pause a second. Now I can generalize that whenever somebody is sick, somebody is in a difficult situation, we need to pray for them. So the Gemara says when you visit the sick, you should pray. The Ramban says that's the mitzvah. If you didn't pray for somebody, you just realize you didn't do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and that made its way into the Shulchan Aruch. As I said, that maybe this came as a little bit of a surprise, but our pasuk, if somebody asks you, you know, because most of the things in Parshat Tezria have to do with Tum and Tara, which don't apply today. So this could be a good question you can ask. Which pasuk, right? Which idea from which pasuk made its way into the Shulchan Aruch? Okay, that will be your trivia question for the week, right? And if it were close to Pesach, you should say, and therefore the wicked son is still at the Seder, and so on and so forth. You're never going to make it as a pulpit rabbi. Hamakom yirapeh. You start saying to somebody Hamakom, they're going to get a little frightened and agitated. Say quiet. It's quiet. It's okay. Look at source 12 and then 13. Vayishmael kimat kol hanar. This is by Yishmael, right? He is Yishmael. I don't know. He is Yishmael. Vayishmael kimat kol hanar. So he is there, he's suffering, God hears, Rashi writes at Kol Hanar, Mikan Shiyash Tfilah HaChola Mitfilah Cherem Alav, that the tefillah of the individual is better than the tefillah of other people. So why exactly is he asking other people to pray? Why do anybody ever ask other people to pray? So let's read the Zohar in source number, no source number, someplace between 13 and 14. It's a metaphysical source, so it's not really there. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Zoti Evade Lakavli Itparamine, the Hu Motzi Shemra, Biyom Tarato, Vavala Koin, Makamashmala, and Mashma, Mandi Ile Lishna Bisha, Salute Lo Olat Kamikut Shabrichu. I'll even say that in Hebrew for you. Mashma, what does it mean? Mandi Ile Lishna Bisha, somebody who's guilty of Lashon Hara, somebody who has Lashon Hara on his chart. Salute hatfilot shelo, his prayers, lo ala'at kamekut shabrichu. His prayers do not go up into heaven. Meaning, this is the Bechor Shor. This is how the Zohar understands the distance from the Mishkan, and the Bechor Shor is telling us, minudem min hashamayim, it's that, hold it. Didn't Rashi just tell me from Chazal that when you're sick, your prayers work the best? Right? You praying for yourself works the best. And over here we just saw something interesting. No, that the Mitzora, he does not have, he has ability to pray, but his ability of God answering his prayers have been curtailed somewhat. Now this teaching, Mishamayim as well, and that's what's interesting about the Zohar. Needless to say, this Zohar has captured the imagination of a number of commentaries. I'll start with Rav Yonatan Eifshitz. Rashi pointed out by Yishmael that it's better for a person to pray by themselves. So the question is, why can't this person pray by himself?
For himself.
Look at the Midrash Yonatan underneath the Zohar. Marmar kala b'gemara d'shabai v'tamei t'mei tzerech l'di l'rabim. It's Pirish Rashi hu ba'atzmo v'yesh l'hakshot. We can ask a question. Lama tzerech b'kan l'di yotzara l'rabim yoter misher cholim. Why is it better for him to tell others more than others sick? Before I get to my answer, let me bring up a question. To eat the prayers Rashi Parshat Vayera, Eitzel Yishmael v'yishmael u'kimata kol hanar, Pirish Rashi mikan shetfilat cholim yafem mitfilat acherim. Here we see from Rashi that the person who's afflicted themselves, their tefillah is preferable. They're the one who really feels their pain. They're the one who should turn to God. The Ita Bezor Kodosh, he quoted our Zohar. But Neiman Nikra Mitzora Musgar, what does it mean that he is locked up? Misugar Tfilato B'Shamayim. He is Minudem, Min HaShamayim. He is excommunicated from heaven. And he goes, and therefore it makes sense. Vasi Shaper, Tzarech Lodia, Tzaro L'Rabim. And it makes sense now why he has to tell others, Sheyivakshu Alav Rachamim, that they should pray for him. Other people that are sick, it's good for them to pray themselves. So it's interesting. By the way, again, lahalacha, we pray for everybody who's sick. Lahalacha, the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Ramban, you have to pray for anybody who's sick. That's part of the mitzvah. And yourself, that's part of the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. But what Rav Yonatan Eifshitz is pointing out is that, yeah, we should pray for all people that's sick. But the sick person themselves should also pray. But when it comes to the mitzvah, he has a problem. What's the problem of the mitzvah? The problem of the mitzvah is that he is distanced from the Shekhinah. So as I said, I find this so interesting, this idea that again, tum'ah, distance from the place which is holy, has just now been translated into distance from the ultimate place which is holy, and therefore this inability to really reach out to God, which again, I do want to go a little bit deeper, and we'll see how much time that we have. So if you look at source 15, the Rikanati, Shirabi Mirakshilav Rachamim Vitasur Ruachatumami Menu, Shatuchamidata Rachamim. Which means that itself is the Tum'ah. This Tum'ah is this lack of Rachamim, as it were. Needless to say, in source 16, the Chafetz Chaim, when he has, among all his other things to say about the problems of Lashon Hara, will point out this teaching, this Zohar. He will like this a lot. And tell you, on top of everything else, when you're guilty of Lashon Hara, God will no longer accept your prayers. Because you are excommunicated from God, which is absolutely designed to scare people. Okay, so that's... He says, he has it in parentheses, Uvizei Yuvan, on top of page 3, Mad Katva HaTorah B'Tamei Tamei Yikra, and so on. Rupirish Razal Shatzer Chaldi Yotzar L'Rabim Rabim Vakshul Av Rachim V'Hum Achmachet Filato Eina Mekabel L'Mala L'Chin Galta L'No Torah Eitz Zed B'Mitzta'er Zed Dafka. Why specifically by the person who has Tzarat? Okay, source 15, this is actually where at one point along the way I was going to start. This goes back to last week's parsha, which I sort of think is where we're going to end. So if we look at last week's parsha, right after Nadav and Avihu pass away, the description over here told to Aaron Ubanov, Vayom Pasuk Vav in source 17, Vayom Moshe Aaron, Ula Elazar Ula Itamar Banav, Roshechem Al Tifru'u, Uvigdechem Lo Tifrimu, Velo Tumutu, Vakoli Dayiktsof. In a certain sense, linguistically, aside from the fact that it's also in terms of its essence, linguistically, this is the opposite of the Mitzvah. It's all the same words. Again, I don't know if you caught this along the line. It was all the same words in terms of the clothing, you know, don't do that to the clothing. In terms of your hair, don't do that to your hair. In terms of don't leave the place which is Kodesh. So I just want to, you know, build up the following, you know, parallel or contrast. We have now, hopefully we realize, we have two opposites. One is the Kohen Ba'avodah, whose hair must be kept short, who has very specific clothing to wear. And by the way, again, think back to that Midrash and Eicha, in terms of the clothing is the big day kahuna. The clothing must be proper. The hair must be proper. He can't leave the place. Why? Because he's doing Avodat Hashem, and this is the most intimate connection between heaven and earth. Meaning, you're the one who prays for Am Yisrael, you're the one who's doing the Avodah, the service for Am Yisrael, and therefore you are in the place which is much holy. But now we realize that the metaphor of being most, and this is all obvious, I think, the metaphor of being in the Mishkan is most connected to heaven. Again, I just think it's obvious. And therefore, the converse is true. And again, just realize that mourning, again, with Tumat Mate in the background over here, that even the metaphors which were used describing the Mitzvah was ones of mourning. You are in mourning. And that's what all the commentaries picked up. You are in mourning. You're in terms of your clothing, your hair, your essence. But the mourning is the separateness or the distance, really, not just from the Mishkan, which is where we started, but it's also the distance min shamayim. It's the distance that we see from heaven. And therefore, as I said, we have two polar opposites. The two polar opposites are the Metzora, who's completely distant, and then Aaron, who we're told is so close, you can't do the mourning, because if you do the mourning, you're going to become distant. The mourning, it takes away the simcha. The mourning takes away the connection that you have with heaven. And if it takes away that connection, you can't do it. What's then interesting about the Metzora, and maybe we'll stop on this point, what's interesting about the Metzora is, what does he do? So according to Chazal, he's contagious. He's contagious, why? Because he speaks Lashon Hara. We'll stay with the Chafetz Chaim, we'll stay with his approach. He's contagious because of what he says, and what he says, he downgrades other people. The things that he says is negative about other people. He doesn't need other people. He cuts them all down. So what is the Torah now saying? You need to call other people to pray for you. You need, again, at the same time, to value other people, which is part of the tikkun, and you need to see how words can be used in a positive way in terms of tefillah. Which means what we're witnessing over here is not just, it's not just a midah keneged midah, and if it were, that would be nice, as it is. But it's much more than that. That this is, in essence, the tikkun that he needs to go through. He needs to call other people. Why? Because this was the guy who was putting other people down. He needs to elevate words because he was misusing words. So therefore, the way that he will be healed and come close to heaven is by reaching out to other people, asking them to pray. And once he's sincere. Unfortunately, again, the way the Zohar puts it is that his words can't reach the heaven, because God is saying to him, you who has misused your words, you've sullied your words, you have downgraded your words, how can you reach up to heaven with these words? But first you need to go through a process. Call the other people out that you've insulted and tell these people how much you need them and how much you value them, how much they need to pray for you. And that becomes the ultimate tikkun for the Metzora, because now he becomes close to God. I'm going to say, in a sense, what Aaron is being told is that you're so close to God, you can't go through this process of distance, because Am Yisrael needs you. The Metzora needs to get to this realization that he needs Am Yisrael. Anyway, have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.